Let's talk about your piece on
Yes, civil liberties
civil
meet
liberties
civil
versus
decency.
civil decency. It's a wonderful piece. It's well thought out. Let's talk about the camp where people are saying, "Well, look," and I'm actually in that camp, and that camp is, I'm wearing a mask as much for me as it is for you, okay? If I have something, I don't want to spread it, and if someone else around me has it, I don't want to get it. So let's talk about the juxtaposition and the kind of tightrope that we're walking here where, you might be doing something good, but even at that point, some people still feel that their civil liberties are being, taken away just because they don't want to wear a mask.
Yeah, so I think it's definitely an interesting conversation. As the wearing a mask is mandatory in several states now. I think it's 15 states, and also a lot of public places like supermarkets where people go frequently. They've already have signs, at least here in California, that it's mandatory. So I think it's very soon we might not have a choice, because if you go to any public place, it'll just be mandatory. So it's so that is one part of it. And the second part is like, okay, what if it's not mandatory in some places? Should you wear it outside? Should you not? And you're right, this goes back to the question. Maybe it's a question that goes beyond decency. It's you got to protect yourself and you have to protect others. But the real good question would be like, why would people not want to do it? I think that is a question we need to ask ourselves. Why would people refuse to wear a mask, even in crowded places?
Yeah, and I think that that's what I mean it, to me, and we're talking about in the state of Maryland and the District of Columbia and Virginia, we all use the same mass transit system, right? And it's different. I think it's if you live in that 500-mile radius of the Baltimore to Washington, megalopolis area, where so many people travel via train, whether it's from Boston to New York or whether it's from Washington to Philly or to New York or whatever. And then you've got, the T in Boston, you've got the main line in Philadelphia, you've got the subways in New York, you've got the metro in Washington, D.C. Literally every day, millions of people don't drive cars. They're on these trains and buses that take you to work or to your pl wherever your place of employment might be and take you home. And if you aren't wearing a mask, which it is mandatory in Boston, in New York, in Philly, in Washington, D.C., that you wear a mask when you're on any transit. And if you don't wear a mask or some facial covering, it could be a scarf, it could be something that is as easy to take as a t-shirt and tie it. They won't let you on. And it's
Right.
as they say, because their goal is to not put people in danger. Now, obviously you're going to be touching, handrails and things like that. That's where the hand washing comes in. But in the jurisdiction for Boston to Washington, it's not a choice. It's a if you want to ride transit, you're going to have to wear some sort of facial covering. If you want to go to a grocery store, you're going to have to do that. If you want to go to a restaurant, you're going to have to do it. I've seen, and I'll, it's not that we haven't been open that much, that long, I should say. I haven't seen a lot of people not adhering to it. A few, but not a lot. Now, in the Northeast, because of it makes sense. But I can see in other parts of the country where mass transit isn't as as readily. I mean, when you're driving your own car and that whole routine, it may seem a bit foreign to some people.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's mandatory in a car, right? But it's like it's only in a public place. Let's say you're going to a bank or the supermarket. It's going to be mandatory. Yeah, I think it's. I think there's also. I mean, I looked at the CDC website yesterday. Mm-hmm. And they only have it as a recommendation. You know, they say absolutely you must do social distancing.
Right.
But, you know, it's also good to wear a mask. It's a recommendation. So maybe that needs to be updated. Maybe that's what causes, you know, the confusion. I mean, I'm just going to quote it from the CDC website, is that CDC is additionally advising the use of simple cloth face coverings to slow the spread of the virus. So maybe the word advising really is just too weak, and people read it, even people who are, you know, who want to get the right information from the right source, they say, well, okay, it's an advisory, so, you know, it's you know, why should I have to wear it if I don't want to wear it? So I think maybe it's a it needs to be updated and say it's absolutely essential that when you go to a crowded place where you may not be able to practice social distancing, that you need to wear a mask. So I think that could be a source of the confusion.
Yeah, originally the CDC website did say that wearing a mask was and should be mandatory. They got pushback from the White House, from the administration. They softened the language. And you're right. By softening the language, they make it ambiguous. When it's ambiguous, then it's like, well, you know, I don't have to do it because they didn't say I had to do it. So if I don't have to do it, then why are you making me do it? So
that's
yeah.
interesting. I didn't know that it was it used to be, you know, recommended or but that's not good. That really means that you have political interference in something as important as health advice. That's not a good sign.
No, it's what happened was the CDC had put forth a group of initiatives which they felt was good standard policy. It went to the administration. The administration pushed back, wanted to weaken it. The CDC pushed back and said this is not a good plan. And so they ended up compromising. And one of the things that was compromised on it was the mask situation. And so that was strictly a CDC versus the administration's plans on, you know, how to do things. And they softened on the masks. So when you get policy involved in science, you know, and mix the two together and try to send a message to the people, one of the reasons we're having problems here is we don't have a uniform, you know, a uniform code of how do we handle, you know, social distancing? How do we handle, you know, what we should be doing other than washing our hands? And if you choose to wear a face covering, fine. But we don't have any real guidelines other than, as you say, the CDC website. It's not really being, I mean, the governors have taken the initiative to say this is what you're going to do while you're in our state. But if you cross the border from one state to the other, that whole thing may change.
Right. That's an interesting point. I mean, I wasn't aware of it, and that's not a good sign when you have public, you know, the political interference in health policies. But the other question is, like, should there be a law? Should it be mandatory? Is it? I mean, how are you gonna enforce such a law? I mean, it's. What if people say, well, I'm not going to wear a mask and I want to go to the bank, or I'm going to go to the superstore. It's just something that just could be hard to enforce such a law. I mean, I think the real answer to this is just needs to be education, peer pressure, just convincing people. It's like, hey, we don't want to make this mandatory. We don't want to be enforcing this. We don't want to be sending people away. But this is for the good of everyone. This is something that can be, promoted or spread the word through the media, through peer pressure, because that is the easiest, quickest, cheapest, fastest way to bring about a change in people's mindset, rather than making it mandatory and having confrontation at every level where people enter a public place and they refuse to do it. I think that the key is really education and information, having peer pressure that just encourages people to do the right thing for each other.
I think you're right. I mean, education is very important. It's like, as I said before, my wearing a face covering, I think personally, has as much to do with trying to protect you guys as it does me, because
Absolutely.
I want to be a good citizen. I want to be able to social distance. I want to be able to do what is necessary to do, because if I do that, and if we all do that together, then we can get, through this process, get back to work, and begin the process of finding out what in and it's become almost a cliche at this point, but whatever the new normal is, and I have a feeling we're going to go through a lot of new normals before this is all over. But you don't want to open the state up only to have to close it back down 3 weeks later, because all of a sudden, you've had a flare up in the pandemic. So I mean, education is very important. And the other part is, not allowing the expansion of the term civil liberties. I'm not so sure that people grasp what civil liberties mean. It's a very interesting term, and unless you want to go back and do some studying on what civil liberties mean, then you need to be educated. You can't just walk up and say, "Hey, I don't have to do that because you're violating my civil liberty." Well, no, as a private or company, for instance, if you let's say you go to a grocery store, and I saw this actually, there was a very big deal was made of it out in you guys' area, out in the Los Angeles area, and that was, of the civil liberties being, this woman went to a Farmer Jack's market and said that she was being, she wanted to come in to the Farmer Jack's market, and the gentleman who was letting people in said, "Well, you don't have a face covering, but I have one. I'll be happy to give it to you." She goes, "No, I want to be able to come in and shop." And he goes, "Well, ma'am, we're not allowing people in." And it became, she goes, "Well, you can't keep me out because, you're violating my civil liberties." And he goes, "No, I'm not, because we're a private a business, and we do not have to. We can allow people. We can make our own rules as to how you get in here, as long as we don't break the law." So as a private owner of a Farmer Jack's market, he was not letting her into that store, because he felt by her not, adhering to the rules that everyone else in the store had to go by, that she was using the term civil liberties, and she really didn't know what the hell she was talking about.
I think it's relatively new. I mean, you have shops next to a beach, and they have signs that you have to be wearing a t-shirt, or you have to be clothed in an appropriate way before you can come in. That doesn't, I mean, you can be in your beach attire outside the shop, and as soon as you go in, you need to change, you need to cover up. So I think it's not that people it's impinging on your civil liberties. But people are just used to it. They accept it. So I think it's also just because it's new, people just perceive that as an attack on the civil liberties. But also there's other interesting questions like why would people not want to wear a mask and protect themselves and others? I mean, that's also a good question. Like, you know, if you put yourself in their shoes and, you know, think what's going on in their mind, why would they not want to do it? That's probably another very good question. Why would somebody refuse to do this? Like, why not? Why would you not want to wear a mask?
You know, it's a very good sociological point because, to be honest, Avi, and you know this as well as I do, one of the things that Americans, for the good or for the bad, they don't like government, or for that matter, businesses or anyone, to tell them what they have to do. Even though it might be for their own good, they don't like being told. And I'm not making a general statement, obviously. The vast majority of the people in the United States will do what they are told to do because it makes sense. But some, you know, do not like being told what to do. And when you ask them to do something, the first reaction is why? Why do you make me do this? Which gets back to your point, original point, which is education. You have to do this because I'm trying to keep you from dying. All right. If that's a problem you have, sorry, you know, but it is. I mean, it's education versus knowing what taking away a civil liberty is. And again, I think that's the other part, is making yourself aware of what your civil liberties really are. You know, what kind of civil rights do you have, and why, you know, how do they pertain to the certain circumstance under which you're involved in?
I think there could be another element to it, and that could be maybe there's an element of mistrust in the government. Because I have read in several places that people say that the virus is real, but the pandemic is fake. It's all manufactured. And I don't know what else do they, you know, with 100,000 people dead, I don't know what do they need to be convinced that it's not a fake pandemic. But also they just you know, I don't know if it's fake news or there's just, but there's a level of mistrust that, you know, we don't trust the government. We don't trust anything the government says, and then that's exactly what you brought up. But I'm also concerned how, you know, because this just makes it harder for us to solve our problems. Because in the future we might need, you know, if there's a vaccine on the horizon that needs to be that, you know, that is effective, there will be people who will just quite simply refuse. I think I've read some online surveys that says, you know, a large number, like, you know, 40 or 30, 40% of the people don't trust, will not trust any vaccines for the COVID virus. So that just makes it harder to deal with the bigger problems when people have you know, a level of mistrust in whatever is going on in the public sphere.
You know, to your point, prior to COVID-19 and the coronavirus, there, as we all know, I mean, I personally every year get a flu shot. There's upwards of 35 to as high as 50, 40 some odd percent of people who would not get a flu shot, regardless of the fact that they could even get it for free. They didn't trust that getting that flu shot wasn't going to hurt them more than help them. And so if that was the case, you know, prior to COVID-19, there's no reason to believe that same group of people who are not so keen on getting a shot in the first place to prevent something is not gonna, you know, get a shot just because they feel that, you know, how do I know this is gonna prevent me from not getting it?
Yeah, I agree. So, I mean, I definitely agree with you on the sense, you know, that the people who see this as a sign that it's affecting their liberty, but also there's also, you know, just can't brush their feelings aside. I mean, you know, they also might have a genuine reason for mistrust in the government, or in many mm-hmm. cases, you know, they might actually be well informed. They go to the CDC website and they say, hey, it's only an advisory. Right. Why does the government always tread on me? Why do they always try to force mm-hmm. things that I can see is not really essential because the experts say so? So I think it's you know, it's not simply a matter of just dismissing them. I think it's, you know, you've got to be conscious about it, that, you know, they might actually have what they genuinely see as a valid reason for their actions. So I think it's again back going back to education, peer mm-hmm. pressure, having discussions with them, engaging with them. You know, I think that is the key, you know, rather than just dismissing them. So I think that's something I would be careful of doing.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think, first of all, you can't dismiss them. I personally, if someone chooses not to get a flu shot, I think that's fine. I mean, that's your choice, okay? It may be for you that you feel that, you know, the science that you've read or the research that you've done, the bad outweighs the good, okay? I can understand that. And to your point, I have a niece who is a pediatrician, for those of you who can actually speak English. There you go, I had a little trouble getting it out. A pediatrician. A lot of kids do not get vaccinated for, you know, childhood diseases because these are very highly educated people who are keeping their children from getting vaccinated because all of the stuff they've read, you know, gives them, you know, so many plus minuses that they feel that, you know, it's a coin toss. Yes, it may happen. Yes, it may not, by getting their children vaccinated. So I totally understand that if you choose not to get a flu shot, not to have your children vaccinated, that those are choices that should be yours to make. And you know, I think that's where we can distinguish between when you're asking someone to wear a mask or social distance only because you're trying to protect, you know, the reopening of a business, and those people inside the business, your employees, versus a choice of being injected with something. I totally see where you should not dismiss the social aspect of that. I mean, it's without right. question. You should have that choice.
I mean, there's another interesting point to note with several of these injectable vaccines is that, mm-hmm. you know, that there has been research in peer-reviewed medical journals, and they say, you know, the claimed downside of the vaccination, which is, you know, autism or some other issue that people talk about, is not because of the vaccine itself, but because of certain impurities that seep in during the manufacturing process. And chief among these are certain aluminium salts, formaldehyde used to preserve the vaccine. So it's really not a problem with the vaccine itself or the science behind it. It's more of a problem of manufacturing. So I think that is a problem that technology and better engineering and better manufacturing can solve. And I think it's again back to education, that, you know, it's, you know, that's not a problem with the fundament with the vaccine itself. It's just a destroyed organism or viral DNA that's mm-hmm. not gonna cause any problems. So again, that's the same thing. The same underlying theme repeats itself. It's all about education, peer pressure, and just clarifying what they actually mean rather than just dismissing them out of hand. I think it's, you know, once people know that it's a problem with the actual manufacturing process itself rather than the vaccine, they would mm-hmm. probably be a lot more, they will be happy to accept alternatives that are safer.
Well, I strongly recommend that everybody reads your column today. It's very good food for thought. And, you know, I think that it's one of those situations where right now, it's going to become more part of the norm as we continue to get back to business and back to school and back to, our everyday lives as we begin to come out of this, that these types of education and types of understanding why we need to look after each other is going to become more and more important. So it's a great column, as always, and I hope that people take the time to read it and to listen to our conversation about the importance of education and the importance of understanding, what is, truly what is a social distancing situation versus, taking away your civil liberties. But as always, Evie, it's a pleasure to have you. And let's talk about your organization, how people can follow it. We'll have it, of course, in the story, but let's talk about that.
Sure. My organization is called Voice of Mankind. It's a nonprofit think tank, and we are here to influence public opinion that affect us all. We help you make sense of this changing world, and people can find me on voiceofmankind.org, or they can just Google search for Voice of Mankind.